This is the Dangerous Men United podcast, where we fight for all young men to be free. Today we have David Thibault, Pete Madsen, John Clares, and we're going to talk about raising boys. John, tell me about how old your sons are.
Yeah, I have an 18-year-old boy. He's a senior in high school, and I've got a 12-year-old boy who's in seventh grade.
Okay, Peter?
I've got six boys, 34.
Yes, he said 32, six.
28, 26. I don't remember what numbers I'm at, but youngest is 11.
All right.
34 and, to 11.
Yeah, and David?
I have one son who is, I can't mention his name, right? He's 7 years old.
All right. So David started this in my brain of how to raise boys or raising boys. He called me one day and he said, I want to have an appointment with you, with my son, to go to Colorado and do a father and son trip. And I said, okay, got my calendar out. When? He goes, in 7 years. What? Yeah, when my son, at that time, when he turns 13, I want a date with you to go to Colorado and play in the mountains. And I want it now so that we could look forward to it. So tell me about your thinking there.
Yeah, June 2026 was...
that's the date, huh?
Yeah, which I have nothing else... It's weird. Nothing else is scheduled out that far besides repeating calendar items like birthdays and stuff like that, routine annual events. So it's interesting. Somehow the idea came to take a picture of a future, or let, if the spirit kind of gives you a picture, an idea of something in the future that could happen or might be a vision of sorts. And then you can start to implant that picture in my mind and then back up and start acting on it today. So I had a future picture of being in the mountains with my 13-year-old son, Riley. And there's one possible picture that there's a 13-year-old boy in the mountains with me who wants nothing to do with me. And so if I do nothing from today and wait until June 2026 and say, hey, let's go to the mountains, and he's hardly known this guy, me, for all those 7 years, or has never known me on kind of a deeper level, all of a sudden, that's going to be a long ways for him to go emotionally and say, yeah, let's talk about real stuff, Dad. We've never done that before. So what has to happen today or now or in the next couple years that leads me to a 13-year-old boy who's emotionally open and wants to talk about deep things out in Colorado?
You did this trip with him lately to a cabin, and it didn't have any running water or electricity or anything. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Yeah, he whined about that a lot.
No screen time.
No internet. Yeah.
No cell phones.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was one of the events that I would do today or now, is try to get to small weekends or small events with him and be intentional about conversations or just hanging out with him and have more fun. So, and as part of me that was, I never experienced any of that. So there was not that. Baton was never handed from my dad to me on like on how to here's how to engage your son. And so it's new to me and very scary, and I'm insecure about it, and I'm not perfect, and I want to.
You're not perfect?
No, oh, not man. At all. Yeah,
that blows that idea.
Yeah, well, it should be, because I have to teach everybody perfection on this. Yeah, so I have, you know, my own sexual struggles and issues that are still current as a 41-year-old, and then how am I going to teach a 7-year-old to not be me when he grows up, in a sense.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of insecurity wrapped up in going to this weekend that I don't know what I'm doing. Nobody taught it to me.
Yeah. Okay. So can we, Peter,
jump in?
Anytime.
Over the years, I've tried to be perfect too. And I've come to understand that God does not want us to be perfect. He wants us to be forgiven, I think.
Yeah.
It's more about forgiveness than it is about perfection and living that forgiveness with your kid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I just heard that word perfect, and I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
We all want to be the perfect dad or the perfect, but in truth, Peter can't.
Yeah.
Peter can't. He needs God and living forgiveness rather than trying to live perfection, which isn't possible.
Yeah.
So anyways, that just jumped out at me, so I thought I'd say it.
You have six boys and 20 girls, I hear.
Three of them, yeah. There's nine kids.
Okay. So give us how you raised your boys. I mean, what are some ideas? Some, you know, like
I love,
David's boys are coming up, and he can learn a lot of all from all your boys.
I love that word intentional that I kept hearing, but I'm not intentional. It was about paying bills. It was about keeping the family together. It was about not falling through the cracks.
Yeah.
Because life sometimes has some huge cracks.
Yeah.
I grew up in a family that loved God and wanted to pursue God. But I came to a point, even after I had a number of kids, where I had to make that God my own. That's a big way of not falling through the cracks, is staying faithful to God.
Felt like that protected your kids and your wife as you were faithful?
As I made it real for me, yeah, rather than just for my family, meaning the bigger family that I came from.
Yeah.
It was easy to say, I'm one of them.
Yeah.
Rather than, this is who I am in God, and this is how I want to go forward from now. Mm. And when Dad's not carousing or being crazy or falling through the cracks, it definitely lends an element of perfection to protection, not perfection, protection to the family. I would say it's not about that I got it figured out just because I'm a little further down the road. I'm still figuring out every day because the cracks are still there. Figuring out how to navigate life is not a one-time issue. It's a daily deal. And we can either include God in it or we can try and do it on our own.
If you would say, what is the best advice you could get David about raising boys?
Say you're sorry. I had to do that a lot.
Yeah.
I'd get angry and I'd go, and give them all my crap. Excuse me. You might have to edit that. Give them all my garbage.
We say, give them all your shit.
I'm just saying, you know, it's your podcast.
Yeah. But you can say anything on this podcast.
And so I think as far as being intentional, it's just saying, kid, do I have this figured out? I don't. I'm trying to do this with you. Yeah, I'm a little bit older and I've got maybe a little more money in my checkbook, but I don't want to go away.
Yeah.
I need you to know that I'm sorry for being a jerk to you.
But I heard you say earlier that you had an image or you had a vision of some sort. And I was curious to know how that comes about. How does that arrive for you? I'm not a guy that gets those.
Okay.
So it's pretty awesome to hear when people do.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it's exercises. There was a group of guys at a pub last night, and we just put out a white sheet of paper and tried to ask, I'm going to picture one of my kids and just try to fast forward 10 years, and then just like, what are we doing together in 10 years from now? Where are we? Are we in a backyard at a barbecue? Are we throwing a football? Like, and then that letting that scene become a little more vivid, like what sound is playing, what's on the soundtrack, what smells, like trying to make it 3D really vivid.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a small exercise that somebody could do, where it's just like get out a blank sheet and sort of let spirit sort of speak and then flow out. And sometimes it's just drawing stick figures and you have no idea. And then something all of a sudden pops. Mm-hmm. Another one, if I just started to think through Riley in 10 years, my son, and like I pictured us leaning over somewhere working on something, brakes on a car or a hobby go-kart, something. And we're just into it. So there's this cool connection between us so that we're doing something together. I don't think it has to be any of those specific objects, but we're into something together. Significant part of that picture. And then also like stiff necks. We've been there for hours. Time's passed. We didn't even know time passed. All of a sudden he like looks up and just turns to me and said, Dad, there's this girl. And so all this intimacy, the trust, like he somehow must trust me at 16 years old to say, hey, I'm going to share this information with my dad and I'm not going to get judgment from him. He's going to listen to me well. He's going to care about me. He's going to offer me some good insight. That was a second picture. Maybe doesn't fully answer your question on how to get to some of those images.
Yeah.
But that white paper, I think some of that's, I like just sitting and trying to let some of that stuff fall out. And then some of them are just junk. They're fantasy. Like, well, I see my son as Tom Brady throwing touchdown passes. But like, well, I think that might be fantasy and not vision.
Yeah.
There's a few different ways. Asking, there's a few good questions. Like, what are the tensions in life? Or you were sitting in the theater watching a movie of your life. you know, when you're in a watching a normal movie, there's like a question that you're just trying to resolve. Is he going to kiss the girl? Is he going to get the job? Is he going to, like, there's something that that character wants. And so to sometimes pull yourself out of your own movie and then watch it play out, always be doing this. Or is there some point where he makes a fork in the road and it's like, nope, he's breaking this pattern that, and all the audience can kind of see it. Like, no, go, don't go to door number two. And they know that, like, yeah. And they can see it, but you can't. And so a few different little exercises.
What's really awesome for me to think about is somebody having a vision like that and then having the awareness to say, well, if God gave me that vision, he must have a path. He must have a way for that to come to be and end up being that way. Value of getting that vision to me is that, holy crap, he does have a plan. So much pressure could be taken off that I don't have to think about it. I don't have to figure that out. He already has in some way. So I just got to pay attention. Sounds like an awesome place to be. And clearly you're thinking a lot about it.
So what have you done with your sons to create father-son relationship, I guess?
So I'll go back a long way. If I think back to things that my mom, you know, or my dad didn't talk much. Right. So my mom passed some things along to me, like there's an awful lot of mistakes you can make that can be covered up by them just knowing that they're loved or that you love them. All the stupid things you do, if they know dad loves me, then 99% of those, they're just going to say, oh, yeah, well, it sucked, but he loves me. I know that.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then we also in my family have a bit of a mechanism in that. It was probably very purposeful on my part, but they're real big hockey boys. They're very into hockey. That's always been really important in my life and my favorite thing. And so we had a mechanism for me to engage with them along the way in hockey, whether it's a 4-hour ride to, you know, to Fargo to play or practice every day or games, before games, after games, success, failure. I have one boy, the older boy, who's very analytical, like extremely analytical. He's also got that brain that retains everything. He didn't learn hockey in a way that somebody does when it's natural. Like my little guy is an absolute natural hockey IQ off the charts. So we attacked it very differently. But my older son was very analytical and it was not natural. He had to work for everything he got. In terms of just skills and ability to play from level to level. So we would literally, I had to map everything. I had to draw everything for him. I had to draw every scenario you could possibly think of in hockey. And it became not just an amazing way to engage and talk with him and work through things with him, but it taught me what I had to do to teach kids how to play hockey. Like there was going to be everyone on the spectrum of ability and natural, you know,
everybody learns skills. Differently.
Everyone learns differently, but to take the guy that needs the most and learn it with him gave me a way to go, I got it. I know how they're thinking and I know what to say and how to draw it and what to, and the thought they should be having in any given time in order for him to grasp, you know, this is how you play. Take that back further. And the other thing my mom told me was I was the fourth of four boys in 5 years. What she describes as 5 years of hell. All she wanted was a girl. I was supposed to be Molly, and I came out John. Right. Yeah. So they never had money, and they had four boys that were out of control, very young age. And she said flat out, "I had to give you to God because there's no way I could do it." So I was, "Hey God, please take this boy and make him yours and protect him fiercely as yours." That became integral to my approach with my boys. Well, and I have a daughter too, but take these boys and it's become a regular practice for me when I feel like I'm losing my ability to stay connected or to say the right things or to impart the right wisdom. It was, God, this is your boy. You know, please take him again. I offer him again. That was key forever.
Ongoing,
it's still today, you know, as he's gone through his senior year and the issues he's faced with hockey this year. And then my little kid is another animal. So he's more aware and he feels more and he interprets more and he can sense, Dad, it seems like you're angry. Or Dad, it seems like you're sad or you're, and he'll ask. He's very engaging. And then hockey-wise, I can give him concepts that are pro concepts, and he can instantly do them.
Wow.
So two ends of the spectrum, both unbelievably fun. That covers, to me, a certain amount of my way of engaging, my way of getting spiritual concepts across.
Yeah.
You know, I could talk for a long time about what I learned from Lowell, even back when I was playing, still playing professionally, and the people I encountered and how he taught me spiritual warfare, taking those lessons and applying them now and then trying to teach my kids. Those were the things that have become, those thoughts in your heads are, they're not from God and they're lies. And here's how you deal with them. I didn't conquer that in a weekend where they became men. You know, it's I'm still trying to figure out how to get them to rely on that all the time, and myself too, and my wife.
Yeah, it's like a lifelong process.
For sure.
Where am I being deceived?
So, I don't know if I covered too broad of a range of stuff, but those are the things that came to mind.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
It's not necessarily a weekend or compare, or you need to cut and paste this little thing that I did and make it like, or if you missed it in your kids' 18 years that you didn't. You did your own weekend of sorts.
By accident.
Yeah. Well, but sports, hockey, keeps you together all the time.
Connected.
Yes.
Connected, together, talking. It's big. Could be a really fun thing.
Yeah. Amazing thing.
Yeah. How did anybody teach your boys spiritual concepts? What did you do that you seemed to work accidentally or intentionally?
Tried to live it. Tried to do it every day. Put it on like I put on clothes.
Yeah.
Put on prayer, put on surrender, put on show them how to ask for forgiveness because I do it. And you mentioned saying, God, how do I do this? And even with oldest boy is far away and grandpa to a bunch of kids far away, I'm still saying, God, how do I do this?
Yeah.
And just, it's not like something you figure out and you've got the formula and you're perfect. You just keep going back and saying, God, how do I do this? And show up. I think that's, don't they say that about a job? Yeah. Like 75% of a job is showing up, you know? Yeah. And big thing about being a dad is showing up and standing there.
You must have showed up a lot because your boys did pretty well into adulthood.
Yeah.
Tell them, say what they do for like work.
Oldest is a high school English teacher. He is married and has 5 kids. They live in a state, 2 states away from us. Next son is an engineer. Married, 3 kids, live up north. Next son is a state trooper. 3 kids, live really close. Next one is an engineer. And he and his wife have 2 kids and live fairly close. And then our youngest of the first 5 is married, no children. He's an elementary school teacher. And then the last is 11. And he is fantastic.
He's not married yet.
He's not married.
No kids.
But he is definitely heading for analyzing sports or
something like that.
Broadcasting or something, because he's always writing in his notebook as far as what's happening, how am I going to bet on this in Vegas,
and who's winning,
how can I work the odds, how can I, anyways.
Have any of them come back and shared any, like, this was hard for me, Dad, or not like something to the effect of you failed in this area. It's okay. I love you, but I'm just letting you know this area didn't work. Have they come back? Have you had those conversations?
They haven't come back to me, but I've gone to them.
Okay.
Because I see that the way I picture it, and this has just come to me in the last year, is that when I sin against someone, I give them pebbles to carry in the pockets of their soul. When I sin against someone, I give myself those same set of pebbles that I carry in my pocket. And so a fairly recent thing is I'm taking those pebbles out of my pockets of my soul, and I'm looking at them, and a wise man will do it right away. It took a long time. So I'm taking those pebbles out of my pockets, and I'm saying, I got to do something with these pebbles. God, what do I do with these pebbles? Because even if it's just a few pebbles in my pocket, over a long time, that wears out your pockets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it wears out your hips, and it wears even just a little bit of weight. So thankfully, I don't have boulders that I carry in my pockets of my soul. I've got just these little pebbles. So I take them out, and I go to them. And I say, you know,
Do you want more pebbles in your pockets?
I think I shorted you, and I gave you some pebbles to carry. And so I'm wanting you to take those out of your pocket. And I want you to deal with them. Throw them away. Yeah. So do they come to me? No, but I go to them.
Do you find that?
Because I'm broken. Mm-hmm. Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Do you find that they recognize the pebble, or they were, I have no idea what you're talking about?
Sometimes they say, I don't know what you're talking about. Other times they say, yeah, thank you. Thanks for talking. Thanks for, it's not like there's Oprah moments or, you know, we have these big sobbing sessions
The engineers won't.
Are you talking about feelings, Dad? Yeah.
Can you graph that for me?
But I think dealing with those pebbles is real important.
Yeah.
And how you go back and do that is key to walking together, key to being together, purposing to not go away. Sometimes those pebbles can be a reason to go away, and if you take them out and deal with them. So that's just the way I picture it in my mind, is that my soul has pockets, and when I offend or sin against someone, I give them pebbles and I give myself pebbles. And so taking them out and dealing with them is real important.
Mm-hmm. I have
trouble. Does that answer your question? Does that?
Yeah, because you have the kids and the oldest. You're the furthest along in fatherhood. And so you're curious, like I have theoretical ideas and I'm working with the 7-year-old, but I don't have real life results. And that's why I had to fast forward and see what you're doing now.
I've given advice to guys on the jobs because in my job, I'm kind of a boss in a way. A boss to myself, at least.
You boss yourself around.
And,
not at home, you're not, but on the job.
Young guys, apprentices will come up to me and talk about troubles. And I'll say, you know, you got to go back to the truth. What is the truth? And so I've been saying that to myself lately is, Peter, what's the truth? Because it's easy to get rabbit trailed. Yeah. It's easy to follow trails that take you nowhere. Yeah. And so it's getting back to that main trail and saying, what is the truth? Okay.
About this situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
I heard once, can't remember where I read it, but it said, the truth will set you free.
I've heard that same thing.
George Washington, I think.
Well, it's easy to get yelled at on the job and think that's the truth. You know, there might be elements of the truth in there. And so same thing as family relationships. What's the truth? Oh, I love my boy. Did he just smash up the car? Yeah. Well, I got to go back to the truth. I got to get back to that main thing. I love my boy. And yeah, I'm in pain because that car we depended on or that, whatever situation.
I had a foster kid that smashed my van 5 times. Wow. And I still see him.
You just got to keep going back to that truth, right?
Yeah.
Because it'd be easy to cut him loose.
Yeah.
Well, what's the truth? He needs you and you love him.
I do. I don't have children, but it is hard to get rid of me as a friend, I've decided.
They keep coming back.
Well, all of you, you know, John, you were like 15.
Yep.
When I met you.
First soccer.
And now you're like 49?
50.
Peter, I met, grew up together, basically.
I was a baby when you were a teenager.
And I met David in college.
Yeah, 18, now I'm 40.
Yeah. So it is hard to get rid of me. So it's kind of like the spiritual father, maybe. You know, it's kind of like hard to get you. God for all of us. It's hard to get rid of. We can't get rid of him. He keeps coming at us, keeps loving us, keeps
wooing us.
Helping us back come to him, which is kind of cool. I'm trying to figure out how to talk to your son about sexual issues at 7. Most guys do a terrible job of talking to their son about sexual issues.
Yeah. What's the stats on average porn introduction now or 9 years old?
10 is average when they see hardcore pornography for the first time. But every time I do retreats and stuff, I always ask the question, how many of you guys, your parents talk to you more than once about sexual issues? And it's only about 1 or 2 guys out of 60. Did they do it twice? I mean, it's very, very rare that they do it 2, 3, 4 times so that they could actually talk to their parents about sexual issues. I mean, it's so amazingly rare. I'm just shocked most of the time. I'm not shocked anymore, but I used to be. Talking about just being comfortable talking about sexual issues with your parents is something we got to work at hard. You know, it's hard to do.
Yeah.
So how did you try to do it with your son?
Yeah, I guess the overall cliche concept might be early and often would be the right thing to do. And then there's a buddy of mine that believes that they're at certain ages, they're just going to filter the stuff that they don't need. So if I fumble with my words or say the wrong idea or concept, they're just going to filter that. They're not ready.
Doesn't matter really. I mean, parenting is like, I don't know. I've never done it, but I do re-parenting.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they give you you get a lot of chances to redo. You know, you could fail a lot of times and you could redo it and fix it and make it come alive again.
Right. Yeah. So I didn't have a lot of idea. I had a couple of books. There's a couple of body books that we have around our house. So kids are pretty familiar with vaginas, penises, and ovaries. What else is there?
A couple nipples.
Yeah, all those. So they're semi-familiar with that. So that just becomes part of conversation. We use the direct words in our house. So I didn't know what exactly, but I liked the concept of most things are tools. So either alcohol can be used for some fun, just getting around, but it also can be abused. A knife or a gun, like some that can be used to kill, but there can also be some creative outlet with them. The knives.
Hunting, for instance.
Hunting or prepping. I don't hunt, but prepping food for a knife or just there's good use or opening a package. Knives are good, but they also can be used for evil. And then, so on that theme, I thought, well, the penis can be a lot of fun, can be used for a lot of good things. And then I've experienced that side of it. And then I've also experienced the destructive way where it's used as part of exploiting women with pornography or just self-gratification, or it's stress, a negative coping mechanism to cope with my stress or depression, antidepressant. So the penis can be on both sides, and it's not a one or the other, but there's a dirty element. Like every time you go to the bathroom, you got to wash your hands. Like there's just an element of anything down there is dirty. And I think that vibe gets into our heads early. So it's just fun to say like, hey, how can I get Riley to just dream and long to have the most fun possible with his penis?
And I love that.
And knives and money and fire. So we rolled out a white sheet of paper again. This is a common theme. And I brought Sharpies. So it was a collaborative conversation, not me talking at him and where he's just going to tune out and gloss over a lot. So it was a collaborative conversation. And we drew a picture of a fire. We traced a knife that I brought and I gave him as a gift at that weekend. We drew money and then we drew a little penis. That was fun because he
recreated. Just a little one?
Yeah. It was, I mean, I'm little, so I don't want to give him wrong expectations.
Or maybe it's the other way around. He looks at it and says, I'm a lot bigger than that guy.
right. I can do this. And the comedy of that, it's just like the fun that it brings around, and he recreated it and drew more and added hair. And like that just alleviates all the stress around the situation.
Yeah, you could talk about that then.
Right. And so two balls and a little stick, and that's a lot of laughter for. So we drew those, and then under each one, it was kind of a column, and we wrote the good and evil that each one could be used. How fire outside of a fireplace is probably bad. And there were pictures of this cabin that we were in that actually burned down at one point. So I could show them, flip back and say, look what happens if fire's out of this fireplace.
Control, yeah.
So we just listed those positive and good under each category and a knife. And then it was cool. I gave him the knife, and then I was doing something outside, and I walked back in and he had blood on his finger and had cut himself. And it was like, I don't even need to say anything because he's learning the lesson. Here's a negative way a knife can be used. But we also, you know, cut some of our food with it and while we're up there. So he saw positive and negative use of a knife. Money, there was a little wallet as a part of the knife package that we gave him. And so he's understanding money is tool. It's not either good or evil.
Yeah.
But penis was a little challenging because I didn't want to introduce, it was too early, I thought, to introduce like molestation. I didn't want to have him start dreaming or imagining.
Fear.
Yeah. Fearful stuff around it. So I didn't really know how to talk about the evil. So that was a little bit confusing. And he said, well, yeah, there's a buddy of mine who like sometimes runs in the room with his pants down. And I was like, I don't know, that could hover on the line somewhere because that's funny. Funny is for 7-year-olds to just run in and be like, look at it. But there's in public, that would be a bad way to use your penis or something. So I fumbled around that. It was not clean conversation, but
as you go, keep going. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to tell a story. This week, a couple of days ago, there was a young man who I've mentored and became a pastor, and he adopted a boy, and he wanted him circumcised so he'd look like him, because he's circumcised. So his little boy would kind of feel the same. And so they had him circumcised, and then they noticed that after some time, they noticed there's a little too much foreskin left. They had him down to Mayo Clinic for tonsils or something. And they had, well, as long as you're here, you know, they brought him to a surgeon here and said, yeah, I could do surgery on it and take that off. Well, at Mayo, you know, you get paid on a salary, so you don't get paid extra for surgeries. They had a urologist come in, and a woman urologist, and she's pulling on the penis and seeing the foreskin, and she's saying things to the kid. He's like three. Like, you have a perfect penis. This is fine. This is great. You're going to just love this. It'll just grow into it, and you don't need surgery and stuff like that. And then they went home, and the kid walks around and tells people, I have a perfect penis. But it was like, that's brilliant of that doctor. Instead of like, he feels like maybe there's something wrong with him, she's reinforcing that this is perfect. It's beautiful. It's growing good. That's brilliant. You know, he's never going to feel like.
He's like, how do you know, Doc?
He's too young to know that.
You don't even have one.
Yeah. How many of these have you seen?
She's probably
seen. She's a urologist. She's seen them all.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was such a cool thing to do to a little kid. You know, to make him feel good about it.
Could see it going negative, too.
Oh, yeah, you could always do that. But still, he feels good that he has a perfect penis.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I like I said earlier, I like how intentional you are. I would say that our discussions around sex were more crisis-driven.
There you go.
Just not as roll out the white paper, make it. They were more.
You were just like swimming in kids. Yeah, this is just. I gotta survive this with my kids. And your wife's a saint.
She is.
Yeah.
She's
yeah, that's better.
She's amazing and really good. Homeschooled them all, and so she was.
Oh, she's more than a saint.
Real everyday involved.
Yeah,
but they came to you. So you had conversations about.
Well, sometimes they get in trouble. You know.
Yeah, porn or
dating girls.
Okay.
Spending too much time. And so you got to talk to him about it.
Yeah.
You know, or you go down and find the computer and boobs.com is on the, so you got to talk to him about it.
Yeah.
So not as intentional, but still addressing and talking.
I think with that many kids, you can't be intentional with that.
Right.
Well,
it's just like.
Well, I mean, your other tensions too, besides a big family, where you're running your own business.
Is that eventually.
Yeah. So
an employee for a long time for a number of different opportunities. Making ends meet. And the economy went in the tank. That's when you start business.
Yeah.
Because you don't have a job.
Yeah.
So, but Peter's a master electrician. So.
Right.
Started my own business and thankfully God's provided. So yeah. I would say it was, and crisis is the wrong word.
Kind of.
Because it wasn't like falling off a cliff.
It
was, hey, we're faced with a situation. What do we do? Do we ignore it? No, we talk about it. And then there were other times, teaching junior high Sunday school class. And I did the same thing with a fire. I brought in stones, and I made a ring in the middle of the floor, and I brought in wood and paper, and I lit the match, and I was going for the paper. And I said, guys, is this the right time and place? I said, nice. Fire's great.
Yeah.
Fire's great. Well, I had my boys sitting in the junior high Sunday school class.
Yeah, yeah.
There are times when you are more intentional. There's times when you just gotta figure it out because today we're facing an issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I applaud you. And I say there's also going to be times when he might know all the right answers.
Yeah.
And
none of them work.
My nature is to still go down that wrong road because I'm a sinner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I need Jesus. I need Jesus all over again today.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
And so we come back to that truth, that main road, and say, man, I messed it up, Lord. What am I going to do? And so then as dad, we step in and we say, hey, I love you. Let's talk about boobs.com.
All right. So each one of you get the final word. Maybe if people are listening to this, what's your best advice for raising boys?
I feel like it's been said already. Just the way you've shared in humility, and it's kind of an ongoing conversation of apology and dad's not perfect and I'm walking with you. It's an open conversation. Let's keep going. I want that trust and connection to happen throughout your life. And that's not the hierarchy of dad's right, always right, shut up, don't confront me, but just this ongoing. It's a little bit of a, I don't know if it's probably best coach-player relationship, because I don't necessarily see buddy-buddy. There will be time more authoritarian, but so I like that ongoing conversation and connectedness, my goal.
You just took what Peter was going to end with. I mean, I don't know what he's going to say, Pete.
Yeah. John, how are you doing?
And I started to think, well, does God talk to me? And I think I can count on, you know, less than one hand how many times I really felt like for sure that was God's voice. And one of the things he said to me in crystal clear, you know, no uncertain terms was, and it happened to be at a time where I was over family and friends going, I'm so blessed. And I, how in the world did you do this for me, Lord? Why? And he said, because I love authentic, not perfect. And so I think our boys are not stupid. They know the difference between authentic and not authentic, which would be, hey, we're going to be perfect, or I expect you to be perfect, or, you know. If they perceive authenticity in your messaging, to me, they're gonna remember it, and they're gonna be more likely to accept it. They'll screw it up, but they'll be more likely, I think, to accept it. So, I've tried really hard to be authentic, and with my really analytical kid, it's been critical that I say, "Oh, I've done that too," or "I've screwed that up too. I know exactly." Which, and he always tunes in if he knows he's not the only one.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And I guess what I would say is I've really enjoyed my successes in life, but I've learned the most in my life from my failures. When I've really screwed it up, when I've been unkind, when I have gone down that wrong trail, I've learned more about how to live by getting back to the truth and going down the road. So rejoicing with my boys, I love to be at their games. And when we won, it was wonderful. But when they lost and it was painful, or Joey's last football game when he got a concussion and got pulled out. And I remember walking back to the bus and he said, Dad, that's the last time I'm going to see the Friday Night Lights. And I just put my arm around him. I said, well, there's excitement in the future. You know, his last game, he was out because he couldn't play anymore. So that failure, that feeling of, he learned a ton, is that life's got a future. We're going to walk it together. We're going to move together in our failures to embrace the pain and move into the future of, okay, God's got a plan and I'm going to walk with him. I guess that would be my advice, is be there in the success and the failure.
Yeah. Walk with them. So my advice is, I'm going to tell you a story, because every young man deals with pornography these days and sexual issues. My advice is going to be indeed to learn to talk to them well. But here's a story. So I heard this last week. There's a kid who went to Dangerous Man Group and told this story. He said his parents are both IT people. So they did everything they could to make sure he would never see porn. His phone couldn't have any apps on it. He couldn't load any apps. Internet was locked down. The computer was locked down. They both were IT people. They checked it all the time. It was like they thought, this is perfect defense here. And the only thing they let him have is BibleGateway.com. The kid figured out how to go to BibleGateway.com, somehow get a download thing, and get the porn through BibleGateway.com. And his parents still don't know and never knew. And he was like, the guilt that he had because he had used the Bible app to go to porn and masturbate was this tremendous guilt until he got to a Dangerous Men Group in college.
Wow.
And it reminded me, you cannot just defend. You have to have an offense. You have to teach kids you have to know how to take a thought captive in obedience to Christ. You have to know how to fight lies in your head. You have to know all that stuff. So go to dangerousmenunited.org, get the book, and teach your kids. Thanks for listening. Go to dangerousmenunited.org where you could purchase the book, which is a small group curriculum, and there's a lot of other resources on the website. And don't forget, be a man to men, a warrior to demons, and always God's boy.